This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
For those who are attempting to protect our watersheds and wildlands, the Supreme Court ruled that runoff from logging roads was not harmful for streams. That's it in a nutshell. And of course, conservation groups and environmental resistance are regrouping and planning for what the next step is in defending the forest. Longshoremen also are regrouping and thinking about the next stage in the fight to protect their rights and their fair treatment. And as the world knows, President Obama, of course, is visiting the Middle East. He was in Israel, and he made remarks which any thinking person would be cause for alarm. Meanwhile, up in Canada, tar sands opponents have won another round. First, the National Weather Service, though, before we get to all of that. Showers likely today, overcast skies with a high near 49 tonight. We have a slight chance of showers, lows around 38. And that wind is still hanging on. It's got its teeth sunk in. We could have gusts up to 18 miles per hour in places tonight. For tomorrow, not much in the way of wet. We have a high of around 49. And for Friday night, look for overcast skies, lows around 36. I will not go into any detail at all today on the alternative forecast. Suffice it to say that we have a waxing gibbous flower moon in Gemini, 9 days old, and that's about it. Now, before we touch upon news from around Cascadia, we do have news from around Cascadia indeed, but we are fortunate. And, of course, on the first day of membership drive, to have a guest who is familiar to many listeners to Air Cascadia, Shahid Buttar of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. There have been a number of events recently which would certainly commend listeners' attention to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's website. Shahid's been some of the articles and pieces that have appeared on the website, it naturally hit home. Ron Wyden, of course, and we are still having reaction to the Rand Paul filibuster, which again, this is Rand Paul does seem to be a unique animal in the Washington D.C. zoo. It was in response to a letter from Attorney General Eric Holder insinuating the authority to use drones to kill Americans within the U.S. After his concerns prompted a later letter conceding the government lacks such authority. Since then, the debate has been raging, and more and more lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are demanding some sort of regulation. And if so, who's going to regulate? They've since taken the drone command away from the CIA and placed it firmly in the hands of the military, so it looks less spooky. But still, good morning. Shahid, I'm so glad to have you with us today to sort some of this out. I myself feel that the drone program is far more than of military consequence. How does it fit into our Bill of Rights?
It really doesn't, and I just want to go back to what you were suggesting before about the D.C. Zoo, which I think was a very apt characterization of what normally happens in Congress, and I'm not sure to what extent folks in Oregon really appreciate just how unique Senator Ron Wyden is. He is, at the moment, the only Democrat, with the potential exception of Jeff Merkley, who is also not far behind him, to join what seems to be an emerging transpartisan checks and balances caucus. The support that Senator Wyden gave to Senator Paul during the filibuster, despite voting for the nominee in order to stay in the good graces of his party, that support that Senator Wyden offered across the aisle was absolutely huge. I mean, its significance cannot be overstated for several reasons, the first of which is that the resistance to the drone program is not a partisan issue, and it would have been if Ron Wyden didn't raise his voice. And the fact that it resonates across the grassroots of all political stripes makes it especially galling that you can't find anyone but you couldn't find anyone in Washington to respect those values until very recently. And I do think that the filibuster, and in particular Ron Wyden's support for it, was of incalculable importance. You know, you mentioned, for instance, that the drone program is being taken out of the CIA's hand, and that very well may not have happened had the filibuster not taken place. I mean, that is a discrete result of the noise emerging from Capitol Hill for the first time really in a decade since the executive branch really escalated the power grab. And the fact that Ron Wyden has been such a unique animal in the D.C. Zoo is something that I think folks in Oregon should be very proud of.
All of this, too, ties in with the increasing powers of surveillance all across the country in various forms. The government's desires and demands and more and more access to citizens' private lives in all shapes and forms in any way they're manifested. It seems to be everywhere. This would appear to me to be part and parcel of the moral and ethical dilemma posed by the use of drones, certainly overseas, and the thought of the domestic use of drones is really chilling, especially in light of the fact with this new powers of surveillance, whether legal or extra legal. It would seem that that's not in the realm of fantasy. We've been assured that they wouldn't be used to take...
Oh, it's happening.
But it is.
Drones are being used domestically for surveillance already all over the country. That's not a hypothetical future anymore. That is a current fact.
But the possibility of... But the possibility of actually using them in targeted assassinations domestically, that's not as far-fetched as it would appear.
That's absolutely true, and I did write a blog post about this, and Holder wrote a letter claiming to take weaponization of domestic drones off the table, but we have to be frank, the OLC memos that spell out supposedly limiting principles constraining the drone strikes, that is to say, they're supposed to be limited to senior operational leaders of Al-Qaeda, of whom Castro is peaceful, that we don't follow those rules either, right? There was a 16-year-old born in Denver who no one ever alleged to even be part of Al-Qaeda who was targeted in the strike and vaporized. And the claim that even those limiting principles are heeded doesn't actually line up with the facts. And it is striking that Brennan was confirmed as the head of the CIA, even though the facts suggest that the OLC memos were finally disclosed after members of Congress, you know, finally stood up and made a big deal about getting those memos. The memos are just words on paper. And if you look at the facts, the memos don't describe what is happening on the ground. And the fact that the Senate still confirmed the nomination before actually investigating any facts, it is woefully inadequate. And I do agree that it was great to see members of Congress standing up for the memos. It is not enough by a long shot. But just to go back to a point that I think people forget, extrajudicial assassination without trial happens in the United States every day. It might not be by a drone. But if you're a family member of a young, unarmed black man who is gunned down in one of America's major city streets by police without any provocation, and that does happen every day in this country, it's not that different. It's extrajudicial assassination is extrajudicial assassination.
Yeah.
And the mechanism is really not nearly as significant as people might think. But we should be frank. I mean, the Bill of Rights really doesn't mean much at the moment. And the fact that Americans are killed without trial every day and could be robotically, if not within the country, then certainly abroad, as multiple Americans have been, it should make anyone very concerned about the future of liberty in the United States.
Shahid, I'm so glad that you could be with us today. There is so much on the Bill of Rights Defense Committee website right now about all of this. It's a bit overwhelming, but I nonetheless would certainly commend listeners' attention to this particular site. We'll put links to that on the KBOO website. And for now, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure, and I do want to commend your listeners for checking out Air Cascadia.
Thanks so much for that. We're going to now go to speak with Will and Carlos, two fellow KBOO volunteers who have made a difference here at the station, and because of that, they've made a difference in their community and the greater world beyond. It's so lovely to have you there this morning, Will Carlos.
Thank you very much, Chris, and I consider it a privilege to work at KABU and volunteer here. I do a couple days a week, and it's something I can afford because I don't have any money. But if you folks out there could call in and donate a little bit of your hard-earned money, we would really appreciate it. You can either be a sustaining member or a one-time donation, but either way, it's really important that you call now to support this terrific show. Chris Andre's show is one of my favorites. I always tune in for it. It's so informative. It's incredible what she can pack in 15 minutes. If you call us at 877-500-5266, that's 877-500-5266. You can help support this show and KABU in general. And we have volunteers standing by, eagerly waiting for those phone calls to come in.
Yeah, you can be like Mark, renewing from Portland, also Catherine and Daniel, who all renewed this morning.
Thank you very much to those folks.
Yeah, it's members like that that are able to help KABU continue to do the types of things that we do on a regular basis. When you become a member of the KABU community, it's very much that. You become a participant in what we're doing here. It's an active involvement. And that extends even beyond just, you know, helping out financially. You can come into the radio station and become an active volunteer, just like Will was saying earlier. You know, I mean, that's basically how he did it, I did it. That's how everyone here got involved. You know,
we have a wonderful volunteer coordinator who works here called Ani, and she's just absolute dynamite. She's made me feel welcome, and anybody who walks in the door will feel welcome and will, you know, find a place at KABU. And you can learn so much from KABU, and I get a lot out of my volunteer time here. And if you don't have time to volunteer, then you can come on down just to check out the station, meet people, have a tour. We're always welcoming people in during office hours, which is when we're open. But if you call us at 877-500-5266, you can help maintain this terrific part of your community. And when you donate, you're doing something for yourself, and you're doing something for your everybody who lives around you or listens, and you can turn them on to KABU. I know I'm always telling my friends and people I know how they should listen to KABU, how they can learn from KABU. And you especially learn with the Chris Andre show, Air Cascadia. There is so much information, so many great guests. And Chris works so hard on her show. It's incredible. And it's a labor of love. And you can help support that love by calling us now at 877-500-5266. And Carlos, we've had some food donated, haven't we?
That's true. I'll get that in here. Grendel's Coffee House at 729 East Birdside. Cannon Ribs Express at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, and Good Neighbor Pizzeria at 800 Northeast Deakum Street here in Portland. Those are generous vendors who have donated food to help sustain what we're doing here with the Pledge Drive. Thank you very much.
A huge thank you to those folks.
Flashpoints, the media and the Iraq war. We'll speak to media activist Norman Solomon about the key role the corporate media played in lying us into, I guess, two Iraq wars in a row. And we'll talk about a lot of other things as well. Also, we'll speak with Vietnamese-American essayist and short story writer Andrew Lam about his new book, Birds of Paradise Lost. That's a really interesting piece of work. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're delighted now to be joined by Norman Solomon. Norman Solomon is the author of a piece. It appeared, I saw it, I think, on Common Dreams 10 years ago, and today, A Warfare State of Mind. Norman Solomon is the author of War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Indeed, to death. And of course, Norman, this is about a war that started, U.S. started 10 years, and then one that the U.S. started about 21 years ago or something like that. But that's old news, even though it's important news. And the new news is that if we don't learn from that history, we'll go in head first into another war with Iran. So where do you start with thinking about how the U.S. Government lied the people into a war?
Well, the wars tend to, so to speak, bleed into each other, and the renditions of what happened in the past war are very much setting the stage for the next one. I think that's what, in part, Orwell was talking about when he said, those who control the past control the future, those who control the present control the past. And just in the last few days, I think we've been treated in a grotesque way to that again from the mass media, where so many of the retrospective accounts of the Iraq war are, to put it mildly, exculpatory towards Washington, and you would think that maybe George Bush was a bad apple. You wouldn't know from the vast coverage of the last few days about the startup of the Iraq war that the present and immediate predecessor, Secretary of State, both John Kerry and Hillary Clinton, were adamant supporters of going to war, not only voted for the war resolution in the Senate in October of 2002, but were on TV basically campaigning for the war, as was the now Vice President Joe Biden, who chaired the most absurd and farcical, tragically farcical, hearings of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which he chaired in 2002. So, you know, this is a process where so many of the people in power are serving a sort of a structural role in terms of the interests that dominate the government. And, you know, I think there's really a parallel, Dennis, between the structures and attitudes and power relations in the newsrooms of the most powerful media outlets in the country and, in fact, at the Pentagon and the White House.
All right. Now, in terms of the second big war that the United States conducted against Iraq, looking for weapons that didn't exist, you were a little bit closer to it. You were there with Sean Penn. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I went on three trips to Baghdad before the invasion. In all three, I was in my role as executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, which has all of our work from that time to now archived at accuracy.org. And the first trip was in September of 2002, where I went with the first member of Congress to actually visit Iraq during the administration of George W. Bush, Congressman Nick Rahal from West Virginia, who is still in the House of Representatives, as well as former U.S. Senator Jim Abaresque. And